welcome to the Gooder Podcast. I'm your host, Diana Frike. As partner and CMO of Retail Voodoo, an award-winning branding agency, I have met and worked with some of the most amazing women in the naturals industry, food, beverage, wellness, fitness. As such, I decided to create the Gooder Podcast to interview these great people and subject matter experts and have them share their insights, expertise, and passion and help businesses around the world become gooder or be better or gooder to become gooder. Yeah, it's all good. Today, we get to talk to a trailblazer. We get to talk about natural snacking, gifting, indulgence, and a bunch more other things with my guest today, Pam Montgomery, who is founder and CEO of Chuck or Cherries out here from, well, you're not in Western Washington, you're in Eastern Washington, Washington State. Chuck or Cherries is a Northwest favorite snacking and gifting fruit brand and more, but I'll let her share more about that. And I'm a super fan, a little starstruck, as I told her before, so I might trip a little bit more than usual for those of you that are longtime listeners, but I'll get into it here pretty easy. So welcome, Pam. How are you today?
Very good. Thank you.
Good. And are you in Eastern Washington today?
No, I'm in Bellevue. We have a house on this side.
Okay.
And, you know, we have a store, which we've had for about 20 years, in the center of the main arcade at Pike Place Market.
Right.
So, and I grew up in Olympia on this side. So I consider myself one of those rare birds that not only has lived on both sides of the Cascades, but understands the culture and loves both sides.
Yeah. Well, and the cultures are distinctly different between Eastern
yes,
and Western very Washington.
Very much.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have a lot to share about Chuck or Cherries, and that's what I'm so excited about, and your story specifically. But before we get into the past and talking about leadership and your story, why don't you tell us a little bit about who Chuck or Cherries is now? And why does it exist?
I'll start with the last question
first.
It exists because when I was 30 years old, I got married for the first time, and my husband really wanted to farm. He had grown up in the Midwest. I was selling commercial real estate.
Oh.
Yeah. And residential, too, during those 10 years, during my 20s in Seattle. Anyway, I met my husband. He wanted to farm. We'd go over into the Yakima Valley, past Yakima, on weekends. And on one weekend, after starting many little businesses in my 20s and selling them, I had a few houses and my former husband had a few houses. On a weekend, we bought the largest cherry orchard in the state of Washington, 8,000 cherry trees.
Oh, my gosh.
Moved over there with a 2-week-old daughter and had to learn to farm. And it was a shock.
Was it? I can't imagine. Yeah, there's probably some romance around owning an orchard, and then the reality hits and it's probably quite different.
Yes. Yes. Oh, there's nothing as beautiful as a cherry orchard, really. However, this beautiful fruit, the seasons of the orchard are really quite daunting. You have to go through pollinating.
Right.
So during the week of pollination, when the bees are pollinating the blossoms, that's early April, early mid-April.
Yes.
If the weather is too cold or too windy, the bees will not fly. The temps have to be 65 or above.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So you've got that. Then once that is over with, and you've got these fruit buds, if the temperatures are too cold, they can freeze the fruit buds. So that's why you have these heaters around the orchard. And then after you get through that, you've got lots of workers. And over the 18 years that we farmed, there were times when in the early days were migration of pickers from Mexico was considered legit, then labor and workers' rights and went in there and designated that they had to be legal or have a green card. Okay, so and then you in this state, labor and industries actually is that you're required to have the state buy the state insurance. So and they don't necessarily understand what's going on in the ground. So it's a very difficult process. And in this particular orchard, which was an older orchard, 8,000 cherry trees had to be picked in 2 weeks.
Oh my gosh. So so you were picking the cherries, and I want to get to the I want to get to the yummy part where people get to know, like, the what do we get?
Well, what happened was the opportunity. The reason Chukar exists is because I saw that many in these 2 weeks, thousands of, I mean, hundreds of millions of cherries were being left on the tree, and they were they were tree ripening. And they got better and better and better. And then as I walked my daughters around the orchard every day, that I noticed that as the weeks went on, the natural sugar built and they would preserve themselves and wrinkle up. So then I started taking samples, dating them, putting them on Ziplocs on my on top of my refrigerator, and I noticed that they would were preserved. So I called UC Davis, and they said, no, won't work. They just won't last. Well, they did. And what it is most of the studies were done with low-grade fruit. This was premium fruit. Okay? So that's really how Chukar started. And it was about the same time that sour cherries were being dried in Michigan. And they were being dried by large co-ops, grower co-ops. And they had to add a lot of sugar to preserve the fruit. Well, I was determined from the very beginning to have no sugar added or very low, no preservatives, which all the fruit, dried fruit back then was
loaded,
had sulfites added. Okay. And then I really wanted to me, it was just such a wonderful, wonderful food. And then it wasn't a couple of different experiences moved me from just drying different cherry varietals, including Bangs, Rainiers, and Montmorency Tart, and even some berries, to covering them in chocolate. And that was a wonderful story. I we went on vacation to London. And the famous Harrods department store back then, and this was before it was, while it was really owned by London people. And at the, for decades, it had been the premier. If you wanted anything premium from Europe, you went to Harrods. And so they had a rotating exhibit of preserved and chocolate covered European fruits. And I tasted a dried Bing cherry coated in premium chocolate. It was in a Harrods little container, but I assumed it was probably from Germany. And it was so good. I brought it back and I was determined to find out how to do that. And back in those days, you didn't have internet. So I would go to the library and get an index card. And the other trick I had, besides real index cards at the library, was I would call cities. And back then, the woman that usually a woman uh-huh. would answer AT&T.
Yes, yes.
AT&T information.
Oh, like I remember.
And I'd say, is there a chocolate company in San Francisco mm-hmm. or is there a chocolate company or a chocolate man? They'd kind of help you.
Yes.
Yes, so that's how I found Guittard yes. outside of San Francisco mm-hmm. because they were taught to not only look at the city you gave them, but the surrounding
yes.
area.
Yes.
Okay. And I called up Guittard, and what I usually did, and it worked almost always, is I would ask to speak to the owner.
Mm-hmm.
And I would just act like I should be able to speak to the owner.
I love it.
And I was given Gary Guittard, who was the fourth generation.
Wow.
Yeah. And then he was CEO of Guittard mm-hmm. Chocolate Company. Mm-hmm. And they are a premium domestic cacao manufacturer.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And at the time, they were just taking off into doing really high-end European-style chocolate,
yeah.
meaning high-end, very good cacao, smooth process, high cocoa butter content, mm-hmm. lower melting point, mm-hmm. top ingredients.
Mm-hmm.
And they had always been good, mm-hmm. but they were really doing a focus on this, mm-hmm. which I didn't know. But anyway, so I flew down and met with Gary Guittard and told him what I wanted to do. And he said, well, young lady, I was a young lady back then, we just happened to be upgrading and automating all our chocolate coating equipment. Our graveyard is out back. I'll call da-da-da-da-da, and he can take you out there, and you can have anything you want.
Wow.
Yeah, so I went back there, and I bought 13 giant rotating with motors, these
yes.
rotating kettles,
yes.
copper kettles on motors, stands. I bought 13 of them. On a promissory, I asked him what he wanted. He said $2,500. A promissory note is fine.
Oh my goodness.
That's how I got started. And then I had to get back and figure out what to do
right.
with this equipment because I had no idea. And luckily, you remember the days. One of my first real estate jobs was at James Albright Realty.
Okay.
And Dana Davenport put in a dilettante chocolate store there.
Oh.
And everything was Dana Davenport. It was his great, great, the czar of, the chocolatier, his relative was the czar of
oh.
chocolate, Russia's chocolatier.
Oh, my goodness.
Anyway, he did these, he knew fine
yeah.
chocolate. And his chocolate was all from
mm-hmm.
Europe. So he wouldn't train me, of course, but he had a brother
yes.
who had also, and his brother Greg, who developed Da Vinci
mm-hmm.
syrup, was kind enough to let me hire
wow.
him for 2 or 3 days
mm-hmm.
of consulting. And he knew how to use the equipment and
mm-hmm.
showed me, and that's how we started.
Wow. That's...
Yeah, and from day one, I knew I wanted to be direct-to-consumer.
Yeah.
I still have my very first
Do
customer,
you?
T.P.
Oh
Schwartz
God.
From Providence,
oh
Rhode
goodness.
Island. And back in the early days, this is before I even was chocolate coating, T.P. Schwartz and his family, his wife was from Kennewick, Washington.
Okay.
And summers they would drive through, and someone had told them that I was drying
mm-hmm.
cherries. So he bought some, and my little catalog then was I hand typed it, and I had a local artist that would draw the line
yes.
illustrations. That was my catalog. And he was my very first customer, and every year he orders, every year I send him a complimentary gift, and every year I get a handwritten letter. And, you know, that is really how Chukar developed. It was a time and a place of taking advantage of opportunity, but from the very beginning, knowing what I wanted and then just nurturing that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Well, it is a very nostalgic way of doing business. And now you and I have been, you know, chatting back and forth over for the last several years. And I know you're a relationship person. And even how I know you've built the operations and your team, right? It's just, you are very much the way business was done, and it still works for you guys. Like, it's, in fact, I think you told me this last year was a banner year for you, which may have been because more people were online searching and that sort of thing. But, what inspires you to keep running the business in this particular way versus, say, you know, using some of the modern leadership techniques? Or, you know, I don't know how to exactly ask that question, but I hope you understand what I'm asking.
We do use the modern leadership techniques, but they're the ones that work are age old.
Okay.
I'm telling you my side of the story, but the story is not about Pam Montgomery anymore. You know, Chukar is its own entity. Yeah. We have an incredible team. I would say that we have a lot of Latinos. One of the misnomers about Latino employees is that they might not, they're probably not all legal. That's not true. Everyone we have is legal and has been for decades. And then we've worked to, if they weren't legal, we've worked to get them legal. Okay. And we mentor our people. We do our because we're manufacturers, and our manufacturing is core to who we are. In the early days, I tried doing what they call, what is that term where someone else makes your product? Yeah, co-manufacturing. And I couldn't get what I wanted. Mm-hmm. And some of it is manufacturing. A manufacturer makes more money if it's, if more margin, if it's high volume. So a manufacturer will require that you do high volume. A manufacturer cannot do everything fresh or just in time like we do. I wanted everything to go out fresh. So early on, I was fortunate enough, I got on a Washington Manufacturing Services. Are you familiar with what that is? Well, it was a state federal organization that state and federally funded, that was developed and it very successfully in states like Vermont, where you have a lot of smaller manufacturers and you want them to stay in business and become efficient. So I was asked to be on the board. Yes. In fact, that's how I met my dear husband, my second husband. He was on the board. But I was asked to be on the board about 18 years ago. And because I always wanted to be a manufacturer because I wanted to control the quality. So in order to do that, I had to learn just-in-time manufacturing, and we have to then teach our teams how to break it down how to develop a standard mm-hmm. that's the most efficient cycle of time they can do in any process.
Right.
And then how to break down the steps so that they're trainable and can keep up that standard. So
yes.
we do that.
Sure.
Continuous improvement is a mainstay. It's foundational to every department, everything we do. We spend a mm-hmm. lot of time mm-hmm. and money on training, and we don't set it mm-hmm. up once. It's a continuous improvement. Every mm-hmm. department is continuously improving. It's very exciting because we're training people that don't even have often don't even have any reference to what we're trying to get across. And so we're learning how to be better communicators. And one of the things that's really important that we do a lot is defining the problem. So what is the real problem, and why is it a problem? What's the impact it's having now?
Sure.
If you come up with some solution, how does that change the impact? And is there a way to test it? Is there a way to train it? So, we're not just Pam with her relationships anymore. But I must say that one of my favorite things, and I still do this,
yes,
and I should probably be careful what I say or I'll get a lot more letters, but I do insist on, we have a any complaints or suggestions are discussed in the morning meetings and put into a log.
Mm-hmm.
And then any of them that are impactful or serious or customers unhappy, I write them or call them.
Yeah.
And if I call them, then I write it down. And many of our guidance in where we go and what's important mm-hmm. are from our customers. Mm-hmm. And it's been that way for decades.
Yeah.
I'll give you an example. Mm-hmm. As you know, the packaging industry has not kept up with the public's need for biodegradable, compostable packaging materials.
Right.
And Chucker has worked really hard to get our packaging as close as possible. Mm-hmm. And that includes belonging to organizations that are putting pressure on major packaging and material companies. Mm-hmm. It also means, like our cavity trays, for instance, in our chocolate assortment boxes, full of our chocolate covered fruits and nuts, the cavity trays that hold the product, we were able to push to get those compostable. So then I got a letter when we were shipping our freshly made pies, cherry pies. We had to keep them frozen, and we were using styrofoam only because there was no alternative.
Right.
And a customer wrote me, and I talked to her, and I said, you know, I get it, and I will double down. And lo and behold, I did. And I couldn't find packaging companies that had a compostable cooler, but mm-hmm. I could find what I did is I started ordering product. It's an expensive way to do it, but I thought maybe somebody else knows can find it. And is lo and behold, I found a compostable cooler. Turned out that it had just gone on the market and they wouldn't take us as a customer because they didn't have enough volume, enough capacity.
Oh, sure.
So it took us a year to get in their queue. But now we have our compostable cooler. Another biodegradable issue, that kind of the big, the last two I'm working on are ribbon and flexible packaging.
Okay,
the bags, the zip bags.
Those flexo bags are tough.
Yeah, so we finally, only because it's finally available, are we going to be able to move towards compostable packaging. Now, it won't have a window. We'll have to do a photograph of the product.
Sure.
But we tested that last year with our fruit and nut mixes.
Yes.
We took the window out and put in a photo. So that's kind of the way we do things. We'll say, okay, this is where I want to go.
Yeah.
How do I keep, give the customer what they want.
Yeah.
At this and need, because they want it from Chukar, high quality, no preservatives, giftable packaging, where you can, where that's food forward.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Because we don't use fillers. We don't use junk. They don't want the product covered up. It's beautiful. So that's kind of how we solve things.
Yeah. So very much a test and learn approach where you're not going to, you're willing to make small areas of testing before making a big commitment.
Absolutely.
Rather than just going, we're going to go for it.
Right. Because there's always going to be unanticipated consequences.
Of course.
Always. And I don't care how big you are, how small you are, how smart you are, how many people you have doing it, you're going to have those.
Okay. Well, I'm thinking about, you know, what I'm hearing here is somebody who's very clear about what they want. And from our conversation beforehand, I know you've got a little bit of fire and tenacity in there as well. And where's the, I'm curious where the drive comes from. And do you feel like you've transferred that tenacity into the organization, or is that just uniquely yours and the organization might behave a little differently? Do you understand what I'm asking?
I do. No, it's not uniquely mine. I think that I think I've always had that. I think it's hard to be someone you're not.
Yeah.
And there's plenty of people who tell you that, right?
Yeah, for sure.
So what's hard also is to find your place in the world, and probably especially as a woman, I will say, where or whatever your limitations you find yourself with, or societal's expectations or limitations.
Right.
But you, you know, it's, I've been fortunate in that I've been able to, in my 20s, I started small businesses, always with the idea of supporting myself, never with the idea of having anything of value that could be sold. I didn't know how to do that.
Yeah.
I had attended Evergreen State College for 2 years. I was the very first student body, by the way.
Really? Oh, that's a big deal. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And, but I was too impatient to graduate. And so I went out in the work world and, I started a several small companies, including a laundromat and dry cleaners.
Wow!
Before starting Chukar. So, and I think you the people It really, we have an incredible team, but some of it is when I met JT, my husband, mm-hmm. on the board at Washington Manufacturers Services, mm-hmm. his great gift is empowering people.
Mm.
And I learned that from him, really.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I really did. He's he did turnarounds at Boeing and ran operations and early electronic startups.
Oh my goodness.
But this was early days, right?
Sure.
And then he's a widower?
He's a widower, yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, widower. Mm-hmm. And his first beloved wife was the first female software programmer at Boeing.
Oh my goodness. Wow.
So when I met him, I went, he likes smart women.
Mm-hmm.
And our company has a lot of smart women.
Mm.
And when I think of what I really admire with women, it isn't just women that have, that are business oriented.
Sure.
By any means. We have incredible single mothers that work mm-hmm. for us. One has stayed single and raised her children. She moved from Chicago and all the way to Washington State, started in customer service. And JT and I were able to mentor her she's been our operations manager for mm-hmm. decades.
Wow.
And just a dedicated, smart woman. We have several mothers that started with us and are really highly skilled. Mm-hmm. One's an incredible copywriter.
Mm-hmm.
And now lives in North Carolina,
mm-hmm.
raising her adopted children. Mm-hmm. And the other lives outside of Portland.
Mm-hmm.
And highly skilled women that wanted to focus on their children and their family life at the same time have this drive to keep their skills up. So we work with them, and the email is always, Beth, I need this. I need it by this date. Is it possible or is it not? Just tell me.
Yeah.
And we have other options. And, we also have worked with, people that we knew were so good that they would never stay with us. One of the very first people I hired was a high school kid with long hair from Benton City that was a computer jockey genius and totally out of touch. You know, came from nobody in his family had ever gone to college. Mm. Nobody, his father was I want to say they came from somewhere in the South, like I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
There's no reason this person should have succeeded. And when I met him, I said, okay, you can do all this. You can run.
Yeah.
You can get us digitally set up. You can't stay here. Okay. I'm going to make sure in a couple years. Well, he ended up at the next job after us was Battelle, was there 5 years, got a PhD.
Oh my goodness.
And do you know that his dad came for years? His dad, when he came to visit it, would stop in and thank me. And on this person's LinkedIn profile, it still says that his first job was Chuck E. Cherry's.
Awesome.
Isn't that great?
Yes, that's a testament to the kind of culture that you have within your organization.
Right.
Yeah.
And I've worked with people that have anxiety issues.
Mm-hmm.
and literally have to, yeah, we do have an incredible culture, and it's, and now we have an incredible general manager that, which really allows all this company, all these systems, all these processes, because our quality has to stay high.
Right. Right.
And our product has to stay fresh. And it allows me to just do the creative.
Sure.
Like my husband always says, he says, Pam, opportunities are like buses. They come by every 15 minutes. And I always say, yeah. And I want to chase after everyone.
Oh, yeah,
so
we're kindred spirits, I think.
Yeah. And what he taught me, and other than that, I don't really work with him at all. But he taught me, he said, build your case and bring it to the team.
Yeah.
So that taught me to build a case.
Yeah.
Whether, and it also, when you build a case, that always also taught me how to communicate in my packaging, how to communicate in advertising.
Yeah.
Who am I talking to? What do I want to accomplish?
Yeah.
Who is our customer?
Yeah.
How much of this do they buy?
Yes.
Why do they buy it? Who do they give it to? Why will this upgrade, how will it affect
them? Of course,
yes. So I learned to build a case, and I'm really, really proud of that because it it's something that I teach my team.
Yeah.
Because they just want to do it.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And then, and it might not accomplish the goal.
Yeah, we call it box checking in our shop.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So sometimes box checking is, in fact, most of the time box checking is absolutely relevant. However, sometimes box checking is not always in the best interest of whatever it is that you're working on, and you need to have an opportunity to just step back and go, just like what you were talking about earlier. Is this the best thing for the project? Can we be doing it better, smarter, faster? And if so, how do we go about doing it? And then
What are we trying to accomplish?
Yep.
What's the problem we're trying to solve?
Yes.
Who are we talking to?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, you know, the other thing you mentioned that Chucker did well during this horrible past year.
Yeah, you guys did really well, I think, right?
Yes. Yes. We doubled our customer base.
Wow.
Yeah. But Chucker was set up. We had been direct to consumer from day one.
Yes.
So our, and over the years, even we've been running like four or five businesses.
Right.
Because we have key wholesale accounts.
Yes.
And we go to the fancy food show and we do trade shows.
Yes.
But we've always focused on not the big box stores, not even the wonderful Costco.
Right.
But let's make sure that we've got a premium gift that we're creating and offering, and a website and catalogs that support it, and a couple of company-owned retail stores for people to taste, which we have. One in Pike Place Market and one in Washington Wine Country in the front of our factory. So we have this whole direct-to-consumer hub we've had for decades.
Yes.
Then we have this whole wholesale hub.
Yeah.
And people say, well, why aren't you in this? Why aren't you or that? Or they try to get us to go in there. Mm-hmm. And what it is you can't be special if you're everywhere.
Yeah.
And
preach.
Exactly. And the other thing is, not a lot of people know this, but you can't tell when you sell your product, you can't tell them what they can sell it at.
Right.
So people would use our product. We would find it at Whole Foods at what we sold it for to them for.
Oh. Okay.
Or we would find it in Amazon And they would have, you know how there can be people that buy your product and then put it on Amazon?
Yes.
Well, if the product was a year or two old and someone bought it on Amazon and it didn't taste good, they call Chucker.
Right.
They want us to, like, okay. So we've really do everything we can to support the quality and the freshness first, and then make sure if someone's giving a food gift, and you know how awful the gourmet gift market is, it's not screaming with quality.
Yeah.
So we want Chucker to be the exception.
Well, I want to talk a little bit about kind of this family approach. Now, we didn't talk a little, we talked a little bit about this, and there's a little story on some of the podcasts and articles that I've done research on about kind of in the beginning days, your kids were involved. I mean, they didn't have a choice because they were we, but I wonder how much of family is still involved in the business at this time, or have they flown the coop, so to speak?
Oh, they've flown the coop years ago. And, you know, I think they didn't have to work in the business. They did if they wanted to. Often they would work in the retail store. My oldest daughter, Vivian, worked on packaging design and worked at Pike Place Market for a while. Alexandra, who went to the U, managed the Pike store when she was there. So, but what's really, really wonderful is lessons learned, okay? They've taken a lot of it with them.
Of course.
And recently, Alexandra, who lives in Geneva, she teaches at the University of Geneva in Switzerland. Yeah, she teaches Renaissance English. Well, she was looking at going into training in corporations because she started developing training programs. And she was recently interviewed, but I'm not going to say who it was, but it was a very, very high-end European brand known as the best. And here she has an undergraduate degree from the university in economics, and then her PhD in Renaissance English and teaching. And she can develop training programs for anything. She knows how to do the research and break it down. And so because she would not only be a trainer, but a brand ambassador of sorts, they asked her, what other companies do you really admire? And she thought about it a minute and she said, well, my mom's company, Chucker Cherries, and told them all about it and our values and our principles and our ongoing improvement and how people are trained. And that just gave me shivers because that's what you want for your children. You want them to have wings, right?
Absolutely. And
the world is changing so fast. They'll do many, many things in their lives. So learning skill sets is really valuable.
I think we like to say learning how to actually the ability to learn how to learn. If you can understand how to learn and you have a learning mindset all the time, you can pretty much do anything, right? Because maybe 20, even 30 years ago, before technology and the speed of life is where it is now, it was kind of known that people might have one or two, maybe a total of two different careers. Now, I think that's changed to four because people are in the market. First of all, they're working longer, they want to work longer. Some people don't want to work longer, but there are people mm-hmm. who might have one or two careers and then they'll retire and then do something completely different or do multiple things completely different. And I think those that are just open to learning and that have the fire and the tenacity like you and constantly looking at improvement, not for improvement's sake per se, like not for just like you're checking the box of we're improving, but doing it because it's what's right and what's necessary, or simply because it's fun, right? I think times have changed, and I think it's a great sign when you have kids that are out in the universe and can think fondly back to their early days, whether it's with the family business or whether it's with somebody else. You want them to have those first few experiences to be amazing for them.
Yes. Yeah. I think the word is empowering.
Yes, absolutely. Confidence building.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. So now with all of this globalization, with Chucker, like, I know you guys have been on the straight and narrow all the time. Has the pandemic changed the direction of Chucker? Are you seeing more opportunities or different opportunities? Or are you kind of keeping in line with the direction that you've been talking about?
There will always mm-hmm. be opportunities. We are always on the lookout for opportunities. Last year we became a winery.
Hey.
Yes, because there is nothing better with Chucker chocolate than a good Washington wine.
I believe that.
And yes, so that totally expanded our gift line.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yes, because, and we've always had this wonderful no sugar added snacks with very minimal ingredients that are so nutritious and good. And then we have these wonderful chocolate covered fruits and nuts, cherries, nuts and berries. So then we repackaged our sauce line last year. And we have very cherry-centric. And the reason we stay cherry-centric to a large degree is because it's an opportunity and a niche. Because there isn't, you can't find good cherry pies or preserves or, you know, wonderful dried cherries in other than maybe one varietal, right? So, we just keep finding opportunities, and I think that is now we have a bakery. That was 2 years ago. 3 years ago we put in a bakery. So that's really where, and I see us as very much staying with using our local fruit. I think we have wonderful partnerships with small growers. We can purchase from all different regions in the Northwest, which have different weather and different seasons. They get ripe at different times. Mm-hmm. They pick at different times. So that's where I think we are
in the near future. Who knows what 20 years from now is going to look like?
Right. We really do focus on the present and the near future, and have faith that everything else will take care of itself.
Well, we've covered so many wonderful things. This is I'm just curious. Before we kind of go into the wrapping up portion of the episode, do you have a favorite cherry or do you have a favorite product?
It changes. Yes, it changes. I love the dried Rainier.
I'm a huge Rainier fan, I gotta say.
Yeah. Yeah, nothing added. They have a lot of texture and they're big mm-hmm. and juicy and really, and they are of all the foods we do when we've gone to like the Aspen mm-hmm. Food Festival, people like Jacques Poupon, the Rainier, they just go to it. To them, they understand it. Yeah. They get it, you know? And their little tip on the Rainiers, get a little bamboo skewer, put a couple on the end, 6-inch bamboo skewer, two to three Rainiers on the end, put it into a nice Viognier or a really good Sauvignon Blanc, and it'll suck up the wine. And then as you sip your first glass of wine, you're chewing this wonderful Rainier wine cherry, and it's filling your stomach. It's putting good food in your stomach.
Invest it. And I'm going to have to do some research and try that out.
Yeah. And then the chocolates, I must say, I just love the Black Forest. It's a ultra dark chocolate on a dried sweet cherry rolled in unsweetened cocoa.
That sounds amazing. Yes.
Yeah, it's a mouthful. Oh, and my new favorite sauce. Oh my gosh. If anyone wants to give a Mother's Day gift, this is it. It's two new fruit sauces, sour cherry fruit sauce and sweet Bing cherry fruit sauce. And they are incredible. I take a little bit and I put it on anything, but I'll also mix it with raspberry spread for my toast, or use it as a rub on chicken breast. You know, I mean, it's just that incredible.
Super yum. I love it. Oh, well, thank you. You know, thank you so much for, I know there's so much more that we could talk about, and maybe that will be another time. But we're wrapping up on our time here, and I have a set of questions that I like to ask everybody. Okay, and the first one is, do you have any kind of, I call this a happy hour fact. Do you have some sort of interesting little fact about maybe cherries or farming, or I guess you call it farming, right? Orcharding? I don't know. Do you have some sort of fact that we could share? Okay.
Oh, right. I do. This is a great thing. Most people don't know that the Rainier cherry was developed in 1960 in Prosser, Washington, where our factory is, at the Washington State Agricultural Experiment Station. And it's the cross between the Bing cherry, dark sweet cherry, and another dark sweet cherry. Like if two people with dark hair have a blonde child.
How did that happen? That's just genetics.
Well, they were working at developing it. And it worked. You know, they're now in the dark sweet cherry market. It used to be that the Bing was the premier fresh market cherry. Now there's a number of dark sweet cherries with all kinds. We'll look at them and we'll say those are Bings. But they all are slightly different. They're looking for firmness. They're trying to breed firmness, sweetness, resistance to disease. So it's all done in the nursery.
I have a question for you. I know this is a little off track. I heard that cherry pits, regardless of the size of the actual fruit, maintain pretty much a consistent size. Is that correct? I learned that maybe a year or so ago, and I thought that was super fascinating.
It is, and it's one of the reasons they can use them in certain pellet stoves. They make a very good filling if they're dried and,
really?
And roasted, kind of. Please don't burn your house down. But yeah, you can put create a neck pillow with them because they're about the same. Yeah, you just use them as a stuffing. They're used as I know people that use them as in place of gravel road covering.
Who knew? Okay.
Yeah.
I know.
I know. Little factoids. Not any more weird things.
I love weird things. Oh my goodness.
I do
Tell me,
too.
Are there
I do
any
too.
Women leaders or rising stars, right, that you are, whether in our industry or not, that you're kind of paying attention to, or somebody that you maybe just want to elevate, give visibility to?
That's a good question. This is terrible, but I'm pretty insular. I get a little nuts when I look out because I wanted. You never know what someone's really dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you never know. And what looks on the surface like, oh my gosh, that's the greatest thing. I could be doing that, or I should be doing that, or how are they doing that? What I've found is that it makes me a little nuts. And I lose my focus. And I don't think about the opportunities in front of me. And what I can improve.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
And some of my most favorite women aren't in business at all.
I would say that would be true for me too. Well, there's a few people in science. Yeah, for sure.
Oh yes, science. Yes.
Yeah.
I agree with you, but I guess I'm like I said, I'm pretty.
Yes. Excellent.
I pretty much keep my
head
down.
Well, so what are you doing to keep yourself safe and sane these days? Or may not safe, but sane.
I am exercising. Sane. I am on a big exercise.
Okay.
I'm trying to build my physical strength.
Okay.
And my
So little yoga?
And I quit drinking.
Well, how does that fit with the wine thing?
Well, you know, honestly, I enjoyed wine for so long that, you know, I know my wine. And I'm not saying I'm going to quit drinking forever, but just about a year ago, I just decided that I was drinking a little too much and I wasn't enjoying it as much. And I wanted to really focus on health and decided to do that. So that's been a learning experience. And then paying more attention to relationships with women,
Wonderful.
With my friends.
And my last question is, if somebody wanted to connect with you for any reason, is there a preferred way? Are you a LinkedIn person or do you prefer? Okay.
You know, the best way is email. I have trouble doing social media and working too.
Mm-hmm. I understand. Yes.
I do need a personal life, you know.
What's that? I don't know. So do you have like a general email that I can put in the notes afterwards? Okay, great.
Sure. It's Pam at chucker.com.
Wonderful. Well, Pam, I have really just enjoyed our time today and your commitment to not just the business of Chucker, but your commitment to the consumer, your clients, your customers, and the end product and their experience with your brand. Really just wonderful to have spoken with somebody that's been within the same company that was happened to be yours, like through this journey. So often I meet young entrepreneurs or people who kind of have been here and been here and been here. And it's really just a lovely story and time well spent with you. learning about your time in Chuckers history. So thank you for your time. Yes. And I'm really hoping that I get to see you at a trade show in the near future. I don't know when that might be, but see your face again would be wonderful. This episode is sponsored by Retail Voodoo, a creative marketing firm specializing in growing, fixing, and reinventing brands in the food, beverage, wellness, and fitness industries. If your naturals brand is in need of positioning, package design, or marketing activation, we're here to help. You can find more information at retail-voodoo.com. And so there you go. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Thank you so much for hanging out with us today. And if you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to this channel and share with your network. Until next time, be well and do gooder.